Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for a special Tuesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. I'm your host, Joe Orrico, and this is a Sports Ethos presentation. You guys can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and you can check out everything that we have on the fantasy baseball content side over at Ethos Fantasy BB. Podcasts, articles, news and notes, updates to the draft guide, you name it, we got it. And speaking of the draft guide, we got updated rankings, we have our draft tracker, we have sleepers and busts, we have more than 25 articles at this point to go along with everything else that we have in the draft tracker. So make sure you are checking it out. There is a link in the description of the episode, and whether you're watching on YouTube or you're watching on the podcast side, you guys can just click in and check out everything we have to offer there. Rankings got an update yesterday, but they're going to be having to get another update pretty soon based on everything that we have seen injury-wise the last couple of days. But we have more important things to talk about than preambles. We got a special guest joining us on the show. It's been way too long since I've had him on, but he's somebody that I've known for a couple of years now through the Twitter world, somebody that you guys are probably well familiar with if you are in the fantasy football or fantasy baseball Twitter universes. Kev Masarejon, you can find him at RotoSurgeon. He's also contributing to RotoBaller. And he is one of the best rankers across a couple different sports, according to Fantasy Pros. Kev, great to see you again, man. How you been doing?
Yeah, shout out to Fantasy Pros for giving me a medium to put like random players in random positions. I don't know why like I do so well. I think it's just because I like continually update it. But hey, I'll take top tens where I could get them. But yeah, Joe, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for reaching out and all. I'm excited to talk some fantasy baseball. Season's around the corner. I am not even going to watch opening day for the Dodgers, and I'm a Dodgers fan, so exciting times. I'm not going to be up at 3 a.m. technically to watch a Dodgers Padres game.
I kind of debated it. It's 6 o'clock for me. I'm more of a late night guy. I usually don't get to bed till about 2 o'clock because I'm just my schedule is very weird, so I don't know if I'll be able to be up at 6 o'clock. It is kind of strange missing opening day, especially you're a Dodgers fan, right? But you'll get caught up. They'll replay those games. But I want to give you a chance, just let everybody know what you got going on, any upcoming podcasts, articles, or anything you want to plug before we get going here.
Yeah, so I mean, there's my Patreon, patreon.com/RotoSurgeon. That's where all of my rankings, all of my insights go. I do eventually post on Fantasy Pros just to get like the rankings updates and whatnot. But overall, for any and all analysis and breakdowns, it's there. My free work is over at rotoballer.com. And then there's the Operating Room Podcast, which I'm going to have you on sometime soon, just to discuss whatever happenings in fantasy baseball. I know there's something every day right now, and it's not even the season yet, technically, just injuries galore. And I'm sure we're going to get into it. So like, I'm actually kind of pissed about several of those closer injuries right now, but I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah. I did a closer preview last week and the whole episode is now rendered meaningless. So I had the great Greg Jewett on sharing insight, and man, a lot of that stuff is rendered kind of, maybe not meaningless, but you know, a lot of injuries, like 3 or 4 of them over the past couple of days. We're going to be talking about the outfield though today. We're going to be kind of breaking it down for you guys. Just kind of, you know, a lot of people, and I've done this myself, I've done like, I think last year, like 5 outfielder episodes and 10 pitcher episodes, which there are enough players that you can kind of do that. But at the same time, I want to give you guys a concise kind of 45 minute or so segment here, just to kind of see what we're thinking in terms of outfielders this year. Kev, what's your general thought process for outfielders? Do you go into your drafts with a plan? I know it generally varies if there's 3 outfielders or 5 outfielders, but for 2024, have you found yourself plotting out your outfield strategy well in advance of the draft, or what's your process there?
I don't typically go in with a general outfield strategy. It kind of just depends on the flow. Like, there are more outfielders than any other position on offense because there's 3 starting outfielders. Sometimes the DH is an outfielder. So I have a general rule of thumb with starting pitchers and outfielders. It's, you know, there's always more in the banana stand. But at the same time, outfielders are some of the most common five category players we have in fantasy. So trying to kind of maneuver getting those studs like Fernando Tatis, let's say early, and then, you know, you get a Adolis Garcia three rounds later, you're just like, well, I mean, I might have two to start, but it's like, do I want to pass up Adolis, who's also a stud? I mean, maybe not five category, but you get my point. It's just, there are so many and they're hard to pass up. I try to build a base, and then maybe that last spot or two, I will stream or get really late. So I try to get two or three. Sometimes I'll even get four early on, and it really depends. I mean, there's so many outfielders to love, and it's, again, it's, they're so fantasy friendly. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm kind of addicted to getting outfielders.
Yeah, certainly in NFBC formats where you need five of them, they go pretty damn quick. Like, I've talked about this a lot. If you're talking like a 12-team Yahoo league where there's three outfielder spots, there's 36 outfielders. Standard NFBC leagues, you're talking 75 outfielders are rostered. It's a huge difference. So I think the average player perceives the position as very deep. And like you said, there's a lot of players, but for, you know, I know you play a lot of NFBC. I play mostly on there myself now. It dries up pretty quickly. We're going to talk about some of the pockets, and there are, you know, a lot in the top 100. I think probably close to half of the top 100 by ADP are outfielders. In the NFBC, I do want to nail down at least a couple of them early. When I have my home league draft on Yahoo later this week, I don't know if I'll prioritize it quite as much, just because I only need three. If I can get one in the early-ish rounds, one in the middle rounds, one in the later rounds, it's not something I really need to think about as much. Is that fair, you think, that if you're playing Yahoo or three outfielders in general, you can kind of prioritize it a little bit less?
Absolutely. I mean, it really depends on best player available a lot of times. Like, if Yordan is staring at you at the turn or like early in the second round, I'm not going to not take Yordan because I only need to start three. But it definitely impacts like the middle of the top 10. Like, it's round four, round five. You have a middle infield and a second base slot and a shortstop slot to have to care about. Whereas there's only three outfielders, I'd absolutely prioritize that middle infield over outfield. Whereas in NFBC, five outfielder, I'd lean toward, or not to say lean, but like I would give credence to outfield as much as the infield. So it really depends on your construction, how many utility spots you have as well. Because again, those outfield spots, I would prefer my utility spots to be filled with outfielders and like first baseman over middle infield types. So again, it's what you're comfortable with, how you like to build that roster. For me, outfielders, first baseman, how I like to fill the UT. So I'm okay taking a little extra, but again, in three outfield roster slots for Yahoo, ESPN, or whatever you play, it definitely devalues a little bit as you go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start breaking it down by tier. If you are going to be watching, I'm going to put it up on screen here, just some of the ADP numbers we're going to be talking about. We're going to start off with the first rounders, the guys that have an ADP inside of the top 15. It does kind of fall off a little bit there between the number 9 and the number 10 players. So this group, and I'm looking at the ADP that we have from a couple of the main events that have been completed on the NFBC. We have 8 of them now. These are high-stakes leagues, $1,700 entry fee. If you're Canadian like myself, it's closer to about $2,500. It's a big high-stakes league. And this is where people are, I think, I don't know how I feel about it in general. Kev, what are your thoughts? Like, is this the ADP I think is like best to look at right now? I go back and forth between this and RotoWire, but the online championship. Is this what you're looking at over the next week or so to kind of get a feel of where you should be taking players?
This is typically what I use, but I will use the data over the past month rather than since October, given that that is the standardized way the ADP does sort. So yeah. I'll go by, you know, mid February or even early March, because drafts have been going on like ferociously over the past few weeks. So I'll get the past few weeks, if not a month of data, and look at that. And I will use RotoWire's OC championship or online championship style ADP, because that is more reflective of like a typical home league where like waiver wires, fab, or whatever you use are, you know, standardized. And like in DC's draft champions, best balls, there's no waiver wire. So the players you're drafting are the players you have pretty much for the rest of the season, more often than not. Yeah, so I'll use the RotoWire OC data. I'll use it over the past month. And it's kind of, you know, these are the people putting the most money in. You'd assume that, not to say they individually know the most, but collectively.
Yeah, that's totally fair. You don't need to filter if you're just doing the main event because they've only been happening over the last couple of days. But definitely, if you are using this ADP, you need to filter, especially right now. A month might even be too big for certain events because of
Garrett
all these injuries.
Cole, Yuri Perez, Gavin Williams, Taj Bratt. Like, you could go on and on. Jordan Romano today. I mean, obviously, the ADP is not going to be reflective yet.
Yeah.
But it's disgusting right now what's happening with pitchers specifically. Some hitters here and there. I mean, Aaron Judge, I'm looking at, I might be a little lower on him given his injuries piling up already, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about this first grouping of outfielders, the first rounders: Acuña, Julio, Mookie Betts, Corbin Carroll, Kyle Tucker, Tatis, Soto, Judge, and Yordan Alvarez. Any massive targets or fades? I know it really does kind of depend on what draft position that you end up getting. But in this grouping, is there anybody that you like? Obviously, we all like Acuña, we all like Julio, but any fades, any massive targets above or below the group here?
I cannot get myself to draft Corbin Carroll. Anyone, I've not drafted him all offseason long. I know his upside. He could go 30-60, sure. But he could also redislocate his shoulder, which has already been an issue for years. 2021, I believe he had surgery on that shoulder. Last year, it popped out again once. I don't know if it was twice. And when those injuries occur and accrue, like, there's serious damage to the ligaments, labrum. I don't know. I'm not an actual doctor. I know my at is rotosurgeon, but I do not want to be touching Corbin Carroll in his draft slot. I wouldn't take him in the first round. I would take Ellie De La Cruz back into the second, early third over a Corbin Carroll because I think their upside is similar. And while Ellie's floor as a player is lower, at least he's healthy. I don't want Corbin Carroll. Everyone else, like, I know Judge I said, but like even Judge, I'd like drop a slot or two. I would drop Corbin Carroll a full round, if not two rounds.
Wow. I've taken him once. He fell to me, I think, at like 10 or 11, and that was the only share that I have. Yeah. I understand the concerns. Now, even with the injury last year, he did stay on the field, and I wonder if that is something that we're going to look at and say, well, he was healthy last year. He stayed on the field. He was able to work through it, so he'll just be able to do that every year. He is probably, I would agree, the one that out of this group, you know, you're getting a back end of the first round pick, mid to back end. He's the one that probably scares me the most. Judge, though, with the worry with his foot that he said it's going to be something that he has to get maintained for the rest of his career, it's not what I love to hear as well. And I think that Judge is somebody where I'm not full fade. I have like one share, I think, one or two, but I don't really want to take him anymore at this point after what we've heard. Like, I'd much rather take Yordan Alvarez. I think they're pretty much the same player at that point. And no, Yordan has injuries. Do you have a big preference there?
I mean, early in draft season, I would have preferred Judge, but now it's definitely Yordan. I still would take both over the next guy, Michael Harris. And I like Michael Harris, don't get me wrong. But,
yeah,
you know, Judge just has first overall upside. It's not crazy to say that. I think he was the MVP 2 years ago, so I think that's obvious. When it comes down to it, there's no real full fades beyond Corbin Carroll for me. I do like Mookie. If you want to, like, I think Mookie should be the second outfielder taken. Just because he has the second base eligibility, you're not even starting him in outfield. Getting Mookie, getting the differential between him and the next best second baseman, who is, what, Marcus Semien, maybe? Ozzy Albies, depending on how you feel. It's probably Albies and ADP, but I think it's just so massive in terms of full-on value between average, between runs, between home runs. And he provides 10 to 15 stolen bases. And in that offense, it's just so crazy that, like, you're going to get that at second base. I would be taking Mookie second. Acuña, even with the hip issue, should remain one, though.
Mookie's going to gain shortstop, too, based on what we're hearing, right?
Yeah, but I mean, their shortstop is stronger than second base, so I would not really want... I mean, I'd be fine with starting Mookie at second base. Shortstop, don't get me wrong, but Mookie at second base is such a leverage play over the field that you can't not love that. Even with Julio providing what, like 15 more steals, I'd rather have the leverage at second base. Whereas it's like Travis Kelce in the NFL or in fantasy football. It's just that he's so much better than the rest in fantasy year over year. It's just a cheat code almost. And that's what Mookie could be at second base.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. I think the versatility that you have, especially if it was a draft champions, of you're going to start him at second potentially, but especially gaining shortstop too, you might have weeks throughout the year where you just throw him all over the place. That is so valuable at the top. I've kind of gone back and forth with that over myself over the last few years. How valuable is it really, especially for those top round guys? Are you really going to move him around that much? But especially in a format where you don't have pickups, I don't think you can even overstate how valuable it is. So that first round is pretty safe. Carroll could be risky, but I think in general, those first nine names off the board are very safe to build your foundation for your outfield. The second grouping is kind of similar here in terms of foundational pieces, not to the same level of talent, but also not a hell of a lot of worry, at least for me. Starting off with Michael Harris, working our way down to Cody Bellinger. So Harris, Luis Robert, Adelis Garcia, Randy Arozarena, Jazz Chisholm, Nolan Jones, and Cody Bellinger. Thoughts on this group as a whole? Is this where you've been shopping this year? Somewhere you're avoiding? What are your thoughts, Kev?
Again, I love a lot of these guys. I have no issue taking... I've taken Michael Harris. I've taken Luis Robert. And when you say talent, I think Luis Robert has the first-round talent. It's just, can he stay healthy? And he stayed relatively healthy recently, as recently as last year. What, he had like 40 home runs and 20 steals or so, or 38 home runs. He showed it last year. And the only issue is he's still on the White Sox. Counting stats like runs and RBI are going to stay relatively low.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But he could be a trade candidate. They just moved Dylan Cease. I think they're probably sick of Luis Robert. They're probably sick of Eloy Jimenez. And you know how they can't, they're not reliable. They might be wanting to get younger. They're both young-ish, but they're going to have to get paid eventually. And Luis Robert's on a relatively cheap contract on $8 million a year. So he's very movable. I'm okay taking Luis Robert, even with the risk of him staying on the White Sox, given what he did last year. Adelis, I've taken him. Arozarena, I've taken him. Jazz, I haven't, just because of the injury risk, but I'd be fine. I've taken him in best balls. So it's not like I hate him.
I've taken Jazz a bunch, actually. I'm kind of just crossing my fingers and hoping this is the year. He's talked about it so much, about how he wants to stay healthy. How much that factors into it, I don't know. If he's going to do different things to aid him in staying healthy a little bit here and there, I don't know. I'm kind of just hoping that this is the year.
Hey, I want to date Sydney Sweeney. We don't all get our wishes, but...
Oh, we know.
I know. Everybody knows. But the thing is, he did say there's some substantive changes to his diet, as in he's not eating fast food as much. He has like a personal chef or something. So take that with the grain of salt you want, but there's something to it. I'm okay taking him. I just haven't, because I do love those outfielders going before him, and he doesn't have the middle infield eligibility he used to have. So take that away. Like we say with Mookie, where like I'm so high on him because of how he has that. With Jazz, I mean, him and Nolan Jones, I mean, what's the difference? I think you could get Jones a little later, and Jones plays in Coors. Jones doesn't have the injury issues. I know he doesn't have the history, I guess, but he did plenty last year for me, and I think that's a good pick as well.
I was going to bring up Jones. I've been a full fade on him. I don't have any shares. I worry about the BABIP being what it was last year. I just want to get the exact number because it was ridiculous. 401 BABIP. He stole 20 bases when he'd never exceeded 10 at any level of the minors. So I'm not sure how repeatable that is. The Coors thing is nice. The rest of the lineup around them is so awful. It's just terrible. Yeah. I don't know what the counting stats are going to look like. I feel like he's been a little bit overpriced, but it sounds like you're willing to take him.
I mean, he was a great prospect. It's not like he's some bum who showed up and had a high BABIP. The average is going to be lower than 297 by all means, probably closer to like 250. But even so, it's like the power is real. He's had that since he was in the minors and whatnot, or since he was a prospect. He's performed at every level relative to age, whether it be double A at 21. And then he got skipped in 2020 because of the pandemic. And then 2020, 2020 because of the pandemic. 2021, he comes back for AAA. He demolishes it. I mean, I wasn't exactly demolishing. He demolished it last year, excuse me. And he came up to the MLB in 2022 and did fine. 95 weighted runs created plus. Underperformed his exit stats. And then he balled out last year. And the steals, yeah, they haven't really been there, but he's kind of jumped between levels a lot. So we really haven't seen the opportunity for him to steal too much. Maybe new base rules are what's helping him. So don't expect 30, but he could repeat 20 in 600 plate appearances by all means. Like a 35-20 guy with a 250 average. And the offense, yes, is bad because of the players. But again, Coors. So kind of evens out.
It's true. I haven't been able to do it personally. I think in this range, a part of it is I don't really have a lot of any of these guys besides Jazz, and Jazz is just somebody I feel like there is that first round upside that I've just kind of been, you know, crossing my fingers and hoping on, the same way that I was drafting O'Neal Cruz a lot when he was going kind of in this range, and now that he's like a second rounder, so forget about that. I find myself more going for starting pitchers, and I had been going for relievers in this range a lot. I've been taking the Durans of the world, the Dovals, the Class A's a little bit earlier, but like I haven't really been shopping for outfielders in general. And I've made this comment on a couple of different position previews. It's not so much anything against the names in this range. It's just that I have different priorities generally at this point of the draft. Do you find yourself looking at those pitchers that are available in this range and maybe prioritizing one over the other most of the time, or what are your thoughts on that particular?
I mean, in this range that we were just discussing, I'd typically been, you know, targeting closers, but now I'm going to be targeting everything else.
Yeah.
So, I had taken, like I said, the Harris's, Roberts, Garcia's, or Rosarena's. I hadn't been taking Chisholm and Jones too much, but I'm okay with them. But now I'm more okay with them given that the closers are falling off cliffs left and right.
Yeah. I don't even know what to do anymore with closers. The thing is, they're going to just get pushed up more. The guys that are still healthy are just gonna maybe not go all the way up to those spots, but
yeah,
Helsley's of the world, the Fairbanks of the world, those guys,
I don't know about them, but like the Hader, I think it's the top end, the Hader, Doval, what's it called, Class A, Diaz, maybe, even though I'm not a big fan, but even so, he's healthy now. It just getting those guys who are locked in as RP1 types that are just like the full-time closers, those are going to get pushed up. Whereas the back end guys here and there, Helsley, Fairbanks, et cetera, still have a ton of risk. Helsley's velocity is way down. So we'll see.
I could just see those second tier guys moving up that are going in like the 80s, generally going into like the 60 range to fill in for some of the other lost closers that had been going in that range. Maybe I'm overstating it, but Fairbanks was already somebody that was pushed up from like the 110 range to like the 80s, some odd range. I wouldn't shock me to see him go in the 70s. It's just a mess. Like the whole thing.
Phillips, he could be a guy that
Evan
jumps
Phillips
up.
Will get pushed up a little bit. Yeah. Kimbrel's been going up a little bit slowly throughout draft season. Maybe that'll be the thing. You know, I'm going off topic here, but maybe those closers that are the old guys that we were generally more worried about will actually be the safe ones this year. We don't know anything anymore. That's just the way. We don't know shit. Exactly. Let's keep it moving here and talk about this is a big tier of outfielders. This is a big group, but I didn't really know how else, like, you could break down outfielders into like 20 different tiers, realistically speaking. So this one's kind of big, but we're starting. I've labeled it the mid rounders. So from Mike Trout all the way down to Jackson Churio, we're talking about Trout, Jesus. Wyatt Langford. I know it's massive,
big range.
Yelich, Brian Reynolds. We're only talking generally about maybe five rounds in the draft, but it's just absolutely stacked with outfielders.
Yeah.
Langford, Yelich, Brian Reynolds, Kyle Schwarber, Teoscar Hernandez, Evan Carter, Castellanos. We have Jordan Walker, Churio, George Springer. This is a range where I think you got to get, in most drafts, at least one or two of these guys, specifically in five outfielder leagues. Who are you targeting? Who are you fading out of these guys? I know it's a rather big group, but who are you interested in here?
Well, I mean, I was targeting Wyatt Langford, and I'm still targeting him, but I don't know if I'm going to pay this price. I'd rather get a SP2, who could be an SP1, like a Grayson Rodriguez or whomever else in that range, maybe Bobby Miller. I do love Langford. I've taken a lot of him. It really would be harder to stomach considering where I have gotten him. It really just depends on how many outfielders I secured early on. But if he's like my first outfielder, I wouldn't even be mad. I love him that much. Mm-hmm. Yelich, Reynolds, I haven't really drafted much. Suzuki, that's the guy. That's the target in this range. I think he is the standout given, you know, how well he hit. He's hit well since coming to the MLB 2 years ago. But in the second half of last year, he really showed out and displayed that upside. I know the steals aren't really there, but power, average, just good offense, good home park. I'm really into Seiya Suzuki. Jordan Walker later as well. I feel very similarly about him. Worst home park. Offense is somewhat similar overall. I mean, they're in the same division and all, but yeah, those are the two targets in this range. Josh Lowe, his injuries are piling up. I think it's an oblique and a hip now. Castellanos, he's a compiler. He's fine. He's kind of due for regression. Lane Thomas, I don't want an okay player in a bad offense. Spencer Steer, I've been out on, but I'm opening up to, considering how many injuries are piling up on the Reds and how good that offense should still be and how good the home park is. So it's not someone I've taken, but I'd be okay with taking now.
Triple eligible. You can put him at first, third, in the outfield. If you're playing on some formats, yeah. Like I think Yahoo, he actually has second base as well. He was everywhere last year. And I think like he played 153 games or something. So even with the kind of, because this was a little bit of a concern last year, there was a lot of mouths to feed and there was a thought. I think there was a couple days there where people actually were starting to panic drop Spencer Steer, not in like your 15 team leagues, but in shallower leagues, people were kind of worried for a couple days. But I don't see him, especially now with the problems with Friedl, with Nolby Marte. They need warm bodies. And while he is one of them, he is going to be playing. And with that eligibility, I think that's pretty damn sweet.
Yeah.
Mike Trout, I guess I could have kind of put him into the tier above, but I feel like at pick 78, is there really that much risk anymore? With like, he could still be close to a first rounder if he plays 120, 130 games. I've drafted him once or twice. He's not been a massive target, but it's just crazy to see Mike Trout sitting there in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Have you found yourself clicking his name at all?
I don't think I've seen him at 78. I haven't drafted recently. It's been a couple weeks since I've done my last OC, but I would absolutely take him at 78. I'd take him over Langford, even though I love Langford. I'd take him over Bellinger, and him and Jones is a conversation because Jones is going to steal. Trout is not going to steal. And I feel like Jones has similar home run upside at least, but Trout's average is going to be higher and they're both in pretty bad offenses. So I feel like Jones over Trout, but Trout is a fine target in that range. I'd probably take Jazz over him too. So it just, but at 78, I mean, where this ADP shows, absolutely over that next tier. So it really depends.
So this is main events. He's been going at 78. And if you're looking at 12-team leagues, so main events are 15-team leagues. If you're looking at 12-team RotoWire online championships, it's 56. That's a huge difference.
Yep.
And I'm just looking at March RotoWire online. So that's still kind of a big group. But even if I narrow it down to like, the last week, Mike Trout is going at 56. So that's a kind of a huge difference. 20 plus picks in that range. I have no idea why it would be that drastic. I guess main event drafters are not seeing the upside or something. I don't really know.
It really depends on how you view his injury risk. Let's say he breaks his wrist after a month. Not saying I want it to happen. I'm just saying, what if? It's a 6-week injury. Are you dropping Mike Trout or are you holding and burning a roster spot on Mike Trout? Is that something you really want to do? There's no IL spots in NFBC. In a home league, in a Yahoo league, in a whatever ESPN league, I would absolutely take Mike Trout and sleep easy knowing I'm getting 110 to 130 games or whatever. Throw him on IL. I'm not burning a roster spot. IL spots are overrated anyway. Sure. A burned roster spot when you need to stream, when you need reliever upside for potential saves, with given the state of closers now, it's a roster spot is very valuable and you're burning it on a player who's unusable for a month and a half.
Yeah. He's also kind of undroppable just because of who he is.
Yeah. That's the problem.
You can't drop Mike Trout. You just can't.
That's why I don't like drafting Garrett Cole right now. What are you going to do for 2 months? And then he comes back, he burns you, and then he has soreness. And then it's like, oh, he needs another 3 weeks to recover. And then is he even good? Does he suck? Are you starting him?
If you're holding him and then he comes back, you're holding Garrett Cole. Let's say it's 2 months. He comes back. You're starting Garrett Cole. And maybe if not in Atlanta, maybe not at Chavez Ravine. Most places you're starting Garrett Cole.
Yankee Stadium is not pitcher friendly. I know he's done well, obviously, but like an injured Garrett Cole is different than a fully healthy Gerrit Cole, especially when that injury is an elbow injury.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just think if you're going to hold him, and you have to have that conversation with yourself, I guess, if you've drafted him. If you're going to be kind of shy about starting him, then there's no point in even holding him. And you can
I just wouldn't. That's just not in my draft strategy whatsoever. In an IL league, even there, I wouldn't bother to draft him because it's an immediate IL. But
I keep getting off topic, but that's my ADD coming out here. I've seen people lowering Gerrit Cole, and I've seen people talking on Twitter, and they're like, yeah, maybe he's probably like in the 120, 130 range. That still feels way too high for me. Like, ranking him as a top 40 starting pitcher still because of who he is. But even with before the injury, there was concerns about Gerrit Cole. Like
where is DeGrom going? Why wouldn't you just draft DeGrom 300 picks later and get him in like August or whatever and get a better pitcher?
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. Let me get this back on track here. We're talking outfielders, folks. I think that in this range, Brian Reynolds is somebody that's been pretty interesting to me. He's very boring, but I think the lineup is actually sneaky, kind of good in Pittsburgh. He doesn't hurt you anywhere. You're looking at maybe 20-10 with a .270 batting average. Do you have any interest there?
No. In a points league, sure. Not in a categories. I don't think the offense is good. I get the O'Neill Cruz hype. I think he's good, but he's not. I don't think he's overwhelmingly gonna like improve the offense like a Julio Rodriguez or an Acuna would to their team. But he is good. Brian Hayes. Oh, is this the year? Probably not. He's fine. He's an average hitter. Reynolds. He's fine too. He's good objectively. I'm not saying he's not good. It's not someone to target. I don't see upside in him. I see good, but not great.
I see a fairly high floor there where he's not hurting you in any category.
I'm not drafting floor that high when there's no upside.
That's fair. That's fair. I think maybe
rather take Walker, rather take even Springer. At least he's hitting one in a better offense. Yeah. If he misses time, he misses time.
Springer, I like that he's no longer a center fielder. I think that mitigates the injury risk a little bit. He would do some crazy shit, flying, like throwing himself into the wall for balls. It's not as necessary as a right fielder. There's two of the best outfield defenders patrolling there with him in Varsho and Kiermaier. He doesn't need to do as much. And he's actually been pretty healthy the last couple of years. He's declined a little bit, but like you said, he's leading off in front of Bowen Vladdy. I like him. And Jordan Walker, everybody was shitting on Jordan Walker last year. It wasn't because of what he did offensively. He batted like .275. It was a good showing from him. It was the defense that was bad and he got sent down. But offensively speaking, Jordan Walker was pretty damn impressive for his first showing.
Yeah, I mean, he was like 20% better than league average as a hitter, like almost a 120 weighted runs created plus, 16 home runs in like 420 or so plate appearances, 51 runs and 51 RBI. The offense wasn't great last year. I think it'll be better this year. Arenado healthy, Wilson Contreras healthy, Goldschmidt should regress a little bit in the positive end. Walker improving should help. Newt Barr when he's healthy. I know it's a lot of what ifs, but so, it's the offense on paper should be good by like mid-April.
I agree. I don't even think they were that, like, I've talked about this a lot too. Everybody's was like the Cardinals were bad as a whole last year, but it wasn't because of the offense. It was because they're pitching. Yeah. Their pitching was,
and it's still bad. Pitching's still bad, but the offense kind of underwhelmed too. It wasn't like great, but it was still fine. It was like a slightly above average offense.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I think the narrative around them is that they were just god awful, terrible. And I think like not even just, I think it's kind of suppressed the prices of like Arenados and the Goldschmidts and the Contreras of the world, just because people, and they're also getting a little bit older, but I think people just view St. Louis pretty negatively at this point. And
yeah,
that's led to some pretty decent deals, I think.
Absolutely. And Walker's one of them. You're getting one of the strongest hitters in baseball at like pick 110 all day. Yeah. And he's going to hit for a good average too. He's a great hitter. It's not like he's one or the other. He's not like Brenton Doyle or some shit going way later.
Yeah. Let's keep it going. Let's talk about this next tier, starting with Jarren Duran. It's like the 150 to 200 ADP range. Duran, Riley Green, Santander, McCormick, Mullins, Christopher Morel, Ian Happ, Jorge Soler, James Outman, Masataka Yoshida. These guys, I find I usually draft at least one or two of them. Cedric Mullins, I think, is pretty undervalued, and same with Chaz McCormick. Those are two guys that I really like in this range. Kev, who are your favorite players to draft in this kind of range?
You said it, Cedric Mullins. I think Mullins is a great buy right now. He's not going to hit too much versus lefties. If he does, it's going to be very low in the lineup, like 8 or 9. But overall, if you look at his stats, I believe groin or hamstring. He had a soft tissue injury in the middle of the season. He was incredible in the first 2-3 months of 2023. Mm-hmm. Fully healthy coming into this year. Offense should be improving. Those young guys are only getting better. Jackson Holliday is getting added to the lineup. Eventually, maybe Kobe Mayo, Kesson Hierstad. They got a bunch of dudes. Ryan Mountcastle due for regression. Like there's a lot of good in that Baltimore Orioles offense. Cedric Mullins versus righty should be heading towards the middle of it. I love that. He's going to steal his 20 to 30 bases. He's going to hit his 18 to 20 home runs. He's going to have an okay average. It's not going to be 290, but it'll be maybe like 250 to 270. Take that all day.
Yeah. He's not that 30-30 guy, yeah. But he can be like a 15 and 30 guy. That lineup
20 and 30. That's great.
Yeah. That lineup, I don't know if it's going to be 100 wins every single year type of team now, but they're a damn good team. They are a damn good team. Yes. Every single day I see Mike Petriello or somebody tweet out a StatCast screenshot, and today it was like Kowser hit a home run, Holliday hit a home run. Like this team is incredible. This team is going to be really stupidly good, and there's a chance that Mullins is even leading off. I've seen a couple different websites. We got Mike Curlin's, we got Roster Resource, all these different sites projecting playing time, and there's a few of them that have Mullins leading off, not against lefties, but against righties. If he's leading off ahead of Henderson and Rutschman, that's going to be damn interesting. He could easily score 100 runs to go on top of that potential 20-30. So I think we agree that he's a pretty nice target. Chaz McCormick, I think, as well in this same exact range. He's somebody I've been clicking on a lot. Great offense, 20-20 potential. No more weird Dusty Baker nonsense going on. You interested in McCormick this year, Kev?
I took him like once in a DC, and it's like, I took him and Mullins. Why not? I think he's fine. He's overperformed some X stats by a good bit last year. He's not someone I'm super into. I don't think he's not like a sexy pick, quote unquote. But yeah, like he definitely could be another Mullins type with like 20-30 or so this year, full-time play time. I just don't think he's very good. He's a good outfielder. He's a good fielder. He's not someone I'm desperate to get. Like, look at like Jorge Soler is below there. Soler could hit like 40 bombs with a good average. Better, I mean, it's not better offense, but like, he'll play every day for sure. I don't know. Like, I'm okay on McCormick. I like Morel a lot too. So this range is fine. I'm not looking at Riley Green because he's coming off of elbow surgery. Santander, super boring, low upside again. Ian Happ's already injured. But he's like an OBP target, if anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this range is very weird. It's very weird. But I agree. There's like one or two guys you should be looking at.
Sell me on Morel, because I see empty power, which, I mean, it can help you for fantasy. He might be a 30 home run guy, but I think it's a terrible batting average. There's no speed. He can't really play the field very well. Do you have any of those same concerns, or am I overplaying those?
Spencer Steer can't play the field either, and he has like multi-position eligibility. It's Morel might get third base if he starts the season there. The power is incredible. I mean, I know you said it's empty, but like, again, I think the offense is pretty good. 70 RBI and 429 plate appearances last year. That's not nothing.
That's fair.
303 BABIP. It's not like he had a lucky BABIP. 247 average. Let's say he repeats that 245 to 250 average with 26 homers and 429 plate appearances. Prorate that to 600 if he plays every day. It's like 35 home runs or so. It's not almost 40. The run, 62. Like six steals a full season, that's 10 steals. We're looking at, I mean, this is not to say a cheap version of, but yeah, it's like a cheap Adolis Garcia.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I could see how we could get there. I could see how we could get there.
Prorate these numbers. That's Adolis Garcia.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay. I'm just looking at it. You're talking me into him a little bit. I just think the price is a little too expensive still.
You're at one pick 160, 170. This isn't even expensive. We're not talking about top 110, top 105. These are guys like, well, what is it? Taylor Ward? Would you rather have Taylor Ward in the Angels offense? I think Taylor Ward's upside is lower too, not just the offense as a player. I know he's a former first round pick, but he doesn't. I mean, I like him. I think he's fine, but like, I'd rather have Morrell. Brandon Nimmo coming off a career year. No thanks.
I'll take
TJ Friedel off a wrist injury. No thanks. Stephen Kwan with no power. No thanks. Dalton Varsho. The only appeal he had was being a catcher.
No, I think we disagree there. I think Varsho, I mean, Varsho's looked amazing in spring,
I don't care. Henry Davis looks great in spring. I don't care.
Lefty,
but you're getting Henry Davis because he's potentially a catcher.
Lefty bomb from Varsho today looked pretty impressive. I know it's spring.
I don't give a shit.
But I think that Varsho could be that same guy as we're talking about with Morrell, except he's another 60 picks later. What's to say that Varsho
20 home runs and 581 plate appearances versus 26 and like 429?
But Varsho could be
he'll double the steals and he's gonna have a lower average because he's not a good hitter. And I don't think he could hit lefties either overall. So he's gonna be benched like half the time.
I don't know if Toronto can afford to do that really, though. We're so thin. We have nothing, man. I don't know how often Varsho is going to be riding the pine. Like, for who? Who's going to put out? Who are they going to put out there?
It's a Davis Schneider season, baby. I'm kidding.
Davis Schneider. I think Morrell is one where I just like a couple of the names going. Like, even Nimmo. what do you got against Brandon Nimmo? He's had two back-to-back really, really good years now. He's batting ahead of Lindor and Alonso.
He's great in an OBP league and a points league, but the power, he overplayed his power last year. I don't think he's a 20-plus home run hitter. Agreed. Definitely there. Closer to the 16. And he played 682 plate appearances. You're banking on him staying healthy, whereas that's kind of not been the case throughout most of his career. Average 274, that's solid, but not really spectacular when you're not really getting too much power. And he doesn't steal at all. The six stolen bases over the past 6 years over like 1,300-something plate appearances.
Yeah, okay. You're right. You're right about that. The power he overplayed, the speed is not really there. I think that you're probably safer in terms of runs and RBIs, but again, that is kind of volume dependent where he's shown it for the last 2 years, and I think this is something that, I don't know, the injury-prone label gets put onto players and then removed. Like, remember Christian Yelich was always injury-prone, and now he's...
injury-prone. He has chronic back issues. And his power is... look at his power. He has no power now because he's injury-prone.
Okay, fair, but he's been on the field for like the last, what, three seasons now, though.
And what is he doing for you? A couple steals, decent-ish average, no power?
Not a Yelich guy, eh?
I'm not a Yelich guy. In a points league, again, these are fine points leagues, guys. I'm not saying they'll take him there, but like in a category league, again, low upside. You're not taking guys that could win you the league. Yelich 4 or 5 years ago, sure. Not Yelich now because he's had chronic injuries.
Yeah, okay. I don't share the same concerns with Yelich. I think he's still somebody who can give you close to 100 runs. Again, the injury thing for me, I just don't even know how to assess it anymore. Like, yes, you have to put more credence into the guys who are more injury prone, but like Gerrit Cole was considered the safest pick in all of draft season, and now he's hurt.
Every pitcher is injury prone. That's different.
But it's different, but is it though? Like,
it is. We're talking about every pitchers across the board are injury risks.
But there are some that are perceived as safe, is what I'm saying, and they're not.
Safer. It's all relative. It's all within a frame of reference.
Okay, they're not on the same plane, pitchers and hitters. It's more just there are people in general that we perceive to be safe, and it's bullshit because we don't know. That's the general point.
No one knows for sure, but you know, again, within the frame of reference, a Brandon Nimmo versus a Masataka Yoshida, who we don't know has any real injury history. And he's younger, and he doesn't run like an idiot to first base and run around the field like an idiot. Like, he's good. Obviously, he's good. I'm not saying he's a bad player.
Yeah.
But like he like Byron Buxton running into walls left and right, that made him injury prone, and then his body degraded. So, I mean, it really depends. And again, I just don't see his upside worth the risk, considering that the injury risk is also added on.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I think Varsho is somebody, maybe it's just the Toronto thing, but I do have a bit of a blind spot for him right now. He's somebody that I've taken the last few drafts I've done. I think that last year was about as bad as it was going to be for him, and we probably won't see him that bad ever again. But again, he is a bit of a risk with the lefty thing. Everybody in this range has some warts on them.
Sure. Everybody does. Every player has warts. It's just whose warts can we look past?
Yeah, you're right. Now,
like Tyler O'Neill, injury prone Tyler O'Neill. He stays healthy. He's playing in Boston. He's playing in one of the right-handed hitter havens of the MLB. he's playing in a great lineup. I think that Boston lineup's better than the Cardinals lineup, at least from last year. And he's going to play every day, likely. Or even if he skips one day or 2 days a week, five category contributor, I'm taking Tyler O'Neill all day, and I'm accepting that injury risk given what his upside is. And his floor, if he stays healthy, it's not that bad. He doesn't even have to hit his 100th percentile outcome. I'm talking like 60 to 70th percentile Tyler O'Neill on the field. Very good player.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to sell me on O'Neill. We're lockstep there. I think that
yeah,
he's, if he's healthy, and I think there's been something with him in spring too, because there's something with everybody, but if he's healthy,
yeah, you know, calf.
Calf again. I think he said calf in the past, right?
But he's healthy now, right now. He played like today or yesterday. I forgot, but I mean, healthy now matters the most in draft season.
Yeah, especially right this particular day because of just everything the last week.
Yeah.
If O'Neill's healthy, then 30 and 20 is on the table. He's only 2 years removed from being a fairly serious MVP candidate. So there's a lot to like there. In terms of the guys that we haven't mentioned, more of like the scraps, the guys, I mean, maybe scraps is not really fair, but I'm more talking
how
like
dare you?
Luis Renjifo type of names and beyond. The Will Bensons, the Kelenic.
Renjifo just got hurt, so I don't know.
Oh my God, I didn't even see that. I'll have to go into the rankings today.
Or he left the game. So I saw like something about him leaving the game, excuse me.
Any of these general late outfielders with like a 250 plus ADP, any of guys that you find yourself really heavily targeting? At this point, there's no strong avoids, but any heavy targets for you?
I think Brendan Donovan's a strong avoid off elbow surgery and not showing too much power. And MJ Melendez, again, the Varsho factor where you were drafting him so high because he was a catcher. Now it's just, I don't want him as an outfielder. I am taking Will Benson. I know the risk. I know the strikeout rate. He walks a lot. Great offense. Great home park. Very favorable left-handed hitting. Friedel's hurt. Who else? Everybody else is. McLean's in and out of games. India has plantar fasciitis. Everybody on the Reds is somehow falling. And
Jake Fraley, I think, had something too.
I mean, but he's healthy-ish right now. So I'm okay with Fraley. I'm drafting Fraley too. But Benson, Fraley later, I'm taking those Reds outfielders. They're going to platoon, but even in the game, or even if they miss games, they're still going to be so productive that I want all of them.
Yeah. Cincinnati is a team that was so hard to project all offseason, and now it seems like it's kind of easy to just slot these guys into the lineup. And Benson was so good last year, and I don't think it's been talked about enough. And I think part of the reason we didn't talk about it in general enough, not you and I, but just the community, is because we just figured, well, there's not going to be room for him. But Benson could easily go like 20-20. I think that he's a really
no higher. He could be 30-20.
Yeah, exactly.
He could be Tyler O'Neill light with a worse average.
Yeah. He's somebody that you should be looking at. Victor Scott is somebody that's been kind of flying up boards.
I don't think he's cracking the lineup.
I worry that even if he does, isn't it just another Estuary Ruiz situation? I mean, it's cheap Estuary Ruiz, maybe a little bit better, but as a rookie, better offense, but generally that kind of vibe where you're going to get single digit homers, maybe 50 stolen bases. The only way I would take him is if I'm desperate for speed at the end of a draft and my build is all the Schwarbers and Alonzos of the world. That would be kind of it. But I've seen a lot of people, even fairly smart people that we know, talking about Victor Scott as being somebody that you should be drafting. I guess I don't mind him in the 30th round, but he's not going to the 30th round anymore.
No. I mean, the last couple picks of your OC, sure, because you could drop him. I don't mind, but I mean, he's been a fine hitter, but 90% over league average in AA, 70% over league average in High A. It's great, and he's a good out. He's a very good fielder. He's an elite fielder, you could say. So there is value there, but they want to give Carlson that leash. Apparently, this is just according to Cardinals beat writers. He has not had a hot spring. He's not good, probably. Maybe elsewhere. Maybe he needs a change of scenery. I mean, we've seen with every single Cardinals outfielder who's been traded ever has turned out good. So maybe Carlson's next, and that's why I'm drafting Tyler O'Neill. Maybe he's another one. But yeah, Victor Scott. I mean, you say Estuary Ruiz. I think he's better. I mean, I don't think that's similar too much. I mean, in terms of archetype, yes. But it could be like better Stephen Kwan, which is good. Very good. Like Stephen Kwan with like 40 to 50 steals, if not more, hitting at the bottom of the lineup. But yeah, I'm okay with it. I just haven't. Man, I hate being wrong on guys like this because that could be so damaging. If the speed is real, But yeah, the Cardinals are a weird organization, so I don't want to trust them. The A's had nothing to lose with Esteri Ruiz, so.
Between the Cardinals' weirdness, the way that you have to kind of, you know, regress a little bit from the minor league to the major leagues, I think maybe Ruiz, like, and there's something I read the other day about Ruiz potentially having a little bit more power than we were thinking. I think it was Mining the News or something. I forget what it was, but he could be a double-digit power guy. I don't know. I haven't really found myself drafted. I've drafted him once, but again, if you're drafting Ruiz or Scott, these are kind of like build-specific guys for me if you really just need speed. I want to ask you about Gavin Lux, because he's somebody that we were all kind of interested in, and now I don't even know if he's going to have a job. Second base and outfield eligible at that point of the draft in the Dodger lineup is appealing, but is he even in the Dodger lineup?
Yes, he will be in the lineup. I think he's going to get the plate appearances. I'm not concerned about that. It's just, how good is he off a torn ACL? We're seeing him like kind of shoddy in the infield. That's why they moved him to second base, and I think he'll be fine. His range is good. It's just the arm and kind of like people are saying the yips. I think he's just kind of getting comfortable. I haven't been drafting him because already the upside was solid, moderate, and he was so cheap before. And he's still pretty cheap, but I just don't want to draft a guy off of ACL. And I forgot what else he tore, but that was a pretty significant and gruesome knee injury he suffered last spring. And yeah, the Dodgers offense is great, but he's going to be platooning. There's no doubt about that, at least this year, to give him days off and to just, like, you know, get a righty bat in there because the Dodgers are so loaded. I don't want him, even with the multi-position eligibility. Let someone else deal with it. Like, I don't want Edmund either because he's starting off injured. I mean, I'm looking at this range. Nelson Velasquez, that's sexy. What if he, again, another guy like Morel, you could prorate. Worse offense, worse home park. But, I mean, that power was disgusting last year. And, you know, StatCast kind of backed it up.
There's kind of some interesting names here. Brian De La Cruz is somebody I've clicked on a few times. I think that he could be a 270 hitter with like potentially 30, 35 home runs if things break right for him. There are some interesting kind of dart throws that you can take later on. And especially like going back to what I said off the top, if you're in a three outfielder league, you don't need to worry about getting like if you know, play the draft the way it comes to you, but you don't need to prioritize it as much as I think a lot of the content you're seeing out there might tell you to, because a lot of the content's geared towards NFBC players and made by NFBC players. But a lot of you guys are in your three outfielder leagues. We're talking how many deep down we're 68 outfielders down by the time we're talking about Brian De La Cruz. So there are a lot of pretty solid names here. Not to say that he should be a massive target or anything, but there are names. There are a lot of names. Kev, any final thoughts on outfield or any players we might have overlooked or anything like that?
I mean, I do like Brian De La Cruz. You mentioned him. I think I'm just going to give away my sleeper. And I think this guy breaks out big this year. And he's kind of largely under, like, not drafted in a lot of leagues. And I don't think he should be immediately producing. But, like, we could be talking about Luis Matos from the San Francisco Giants in a month and being like, holy shit, this guy is, like, almost a must roster across leagues. Like a better version of Brian De La Cruz with speed, if anything. So I do like I like Luis Matos a lot. I think we're going to be drafting him top 200 potentially next year, if not higher. Upside is five category. Offense isn't great, but they added Chapman. They look like they're trying to compete this year. He's someone I'm definitely targeting late. I have a lot of in DCs, not much in OCs because the playtime could be a little sporadic with Yastrzemski still kind of in the mix. But if he gets DFA'd, if he gets moved, or if he gets like, you know, just full on benched, Matos with full on playtime, we're going to be loving.
The Giants have quietly had one of the best off seasons in all of baseball. And it was kind of been the last month or so where they've trickled in these signings. For the first few months of the off season, it looked pretty bad, but Snell, Chapman, Hicks, Lee, like it's a pretty decent Robbie Ray. Like it's not a bad off season. I know you're a Dodger fan, so you're probably not what you want to see, but
I mean, again, they're doing all this and still it's like, oh, they're still in the division with the Dodgers. So
yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, when you guys open up the pocketbooks the way you did this offseason, it's going to be tricky. And I don't want to open up that door because as a Blue Jay fan, it is still a sore spot and probably will be for the duration of that contract. So we'll have to revisit that in about 10 years. But Kev, in all seriousness, great to catch up with you, man. And I know we kind of bounced all over topics here, but I hope we're able to clear some things up for people, give a little bit of advice on the outfield. But thanks again, man.
No problem. Everybody make sure to check me out at RotoSurgeon, the podcast, The Operating Room, Patreon, patreon.com/RotoSurgeon for all of my rankings and analysis and whatnot. Yeah, Joe, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Speaking of NL West, I do think the Padres are still sneaky, the second best team. And the Cease edition was massive. So shout out to the Padres for actually kind of doing something. Tatis should probably go in top five consensus too. But yeah, that's all I got.
The Padres have a very nice looking bullpen. They added Cease. They still got Tatis, Machado. Like, they could be dangerous. Like you said, the West is going to be kind of tough for everybody to compete in. Probably a race to second place, but it should be pretty fun. Of course, that's why we play the games. You never know what's going to happen. Like Kev said, go check him out at RotoSurgeon. Causing some trouble over there, I'm sure, on Twitter. That's generally what the two of us get into. Causing trouble, starting fights. That's all the fun of it. You can check me out at JoelRico99. And make sure you're checking out everything in our draft guide at EthosFantasyBB. We post out updates there daily to new content and for any different updates to our rankings or articles. Guys, that'll do it. We'll be back again tomorrow. But until then, take care and have a great night.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.